So I'm with author Bernadette Schwert, who's written a couple of books on how to be an online retailer and succeeding in that world. And we were just talking about last week women in the online world who have a much larger percentage in terms of their representation in leadership positions, ownership positions, and it's very much the talk at the moment around the world about gender equality, and everyone's very mindful around that. So what else did you see with the women that you met who had succeeded? Were they, you know, women who were pretending to be, ballsy men, or were they actually, they were individual? Is there a distinction there, or is so therefore they, in their own right, the women who are succeeding are doing so without having to pretending to fake it like a man?
I think, without being too general, because I think there's a temptation to say all women are this, but the women I interviewed and the women I met, I think what women bring to a corporation or an organisation, online or not, is just a more of an emphasis in, say, creativity or collaboration, or they don't have all the answers, more willing to say, let's collaborate. Let's see if we've all can come up with a better idea. So those soft skills, I think women can bring into play. And again, I'm being completely general here, but I think the other reason I think women are represented well in online business is because they've had a strong need to, because they've been, say, early 30s, working in a corporation, doing well, want to have children. And they know that if they go back into the workforce, they're going to have to get childcare. They're going to have to struggle, with that juggle. And they think, well, I've got an idea for an online business. Why don't I just build it from home? Mm. Or build it before I leave home and before I leave work. And when the child's born, I'm ready to rock. So I think women have a very strong driving force to want an online business and have that control over their environment, control over their time, because they think, well, I reckon I can do it. I've seen other people do it. I've got some skills. I've got passion for this. I'm going to make it work. So I think that's partly why, because they want the flexibility that being in business for themselves really mm-hmm. offers. And then I think they bring that sensibility of, I don't have all the answers, and that sort of humbleness or humility can be a winning factor in leadership.
See, I mean, obviously being a bloke, it's a bit different because I'm on the side that's been in the driver's seat for, call it what you will, for so many years. But I've never ever seen men or women as better or worse than other. Like, if you really want something and you want to do it, you just do it. I guess the reason being is, and I'm an optimist. I always look for the positive in everything. That's one of my traits. I can see women who have already run countries. They're doing that now and have done in the past. I've seen women, the CEOs of some of the biggest companies in the world. I've seen women who have done all these things. And so we don't need proof that they can, they've already done it. Mm. We've gone past that. So for anyone to be still thinking, that's over to me. It's not over in terms of there isn't gender equality, but I, having been a bloke, or I am a bloke.
And continue to be a bloke.
Yes. But, in business, you can see that I don't know whether I can, whether it's, I trust women more because it doesn't feel like they're going to shaft you, or they're trying to, How can they take advantage of you? So if a woman is running a country or running an organization, there is, for me, an assumption that women have more integrity and more ethics, and therefore that's a good thing. And I believe that those traits will always, good will always conquer over evil, except in some of the Star Wars movies, but you hope that by the end of the Jedi's will. But It's a bit like that. So I think the more that we that women and men, but in particular women, are pointing out the glass ceilings or the reasons why, it's harder to then break away. I remember when I first, it's not related, but it is kind of related. And I did Tony Robbins too. I can't remember much about what I did because it's 24 years ago in 1994. I do remember walking across the hot coals. And so there were some things that obviously were embedded into my system. But when I first started Booktopia, when I first started my first business, my business called Best People International, from the front room of my house, and I started to have a few employees, the bills would pile up every month. There'd be rent and there'd be wages and there'd be electricity and internet and whatever else. And I saw the in-tray it was just, and I never run a company before and I never had to take care of, I remember this, I have to take care of those bills. When I worked as a recruiter, there was someone else who, I just did all the selling and money came in and someone else paid everything. So, I've got to pay that. And it was just making me sick in the stomach. And I remember, it's a bit of a Tony Robbins thing, it's an NLP thing, is that I remember seeing the tray and literally turning my back to it, imagining, they're the bills behind me, and then in the opposite direction were the sales. So all I got to do is focus on the sales. And when I focused on the sales, would you believe, sales really increased and the bills got taken care of. And it's a little bit like that with all this stuff. If you keep focusing on, look, there's a glass ceiling, there'll always be a glass ceiling. Mm. There is no glass ceiling. It's just a word. Mm. It doesn't exist. And these are the things that men and women, kids in particular, just need to detonate. We need to be able to go, it's history. We've gone through that, guys. Just move on. And I think once we do that, it's just so much easier then to for all of us to embrace what is already the new world. Mm. It's very hard for these old models to continue when it's obvious that they the world is flat. The world is flat. Actually, the world is not flat, No, the world is flat. No, actually, it isn't. Oh. Eventually it's just like, we used to think that the world is flat. Mm. I remember that. I remember when women couldn't vote. Well, I don't because I'm too young, but there was a time when women couldn't vote. Mm. And now it's just like, what do you mean women can't vote?
Yeah.
But there was a time when it was just a victory. It's ancient history now.
Yeah.
And these are all the things that it's really important for all of us to be aware. And for those that are aware, to move through, because it's just, that's all dead thinking.
Mm.
That's interesting. And so what about for the younger generation, do you do any work with kids or schools? So what's happening there?
Yeah, I'm really interested in that area because entrepreneurship as a concept is now open to anybody. And there's one little girl I mentioned in the book. She was 9 years old and she's a coding whiz. And she created an app for her sister. And the app won an award and she got to go to Apple's coding conference in America, 9-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about that story because she used the same principles that all the big online entrepreneurs use, but she did it in a very small way. And I liken that to if a 9-year-old can do that, mm-hmm. what's stopping them from setting up a company? Obviously, they haven't got the experience and the knowledge of, money and systems and human resources, etc. But if all they need is that extra bit put on top, but they've got access to technology, open access enables everybody to, get information. YouTube, you can learn anything. You can set up a website, $50 on Wix. So when you see all these barriers to entry being obliterated, the concept of being an entrepreneur is open to anybody. And I use my son in the book a little bit because he's 11. And at his school, they use these apps like Trello and Hopscotch and all these other ones I can't quite recall off the top of my head. But when I talk to the entrepreneurs, they use the same apps.
I use Trello.
For communication. And this is an 11-year-old, and they do it for fun, to communicate with other kids in the class. And I'm thinking, wow, if he's using that at 11 for fun, what will he be like at 21, 31? What will they just do automatically that we have to maybe learn and do against our will, because they think, oh, another app I've got to learn. You know, so I'm very interested in how can we help the children tap into their innate creativity and curiosity and use technology to build businesses that suit them, that enable them to have some control over their destiny. Because I think the days of you and me, Tony, we're reasonably similar age, I think.
You're much younger than me.
Not that much, I don't think. But I remember my early days. I got a job in a bank, easy. Big W, first job. I worked in a factory at Holden's. You know, I had low-level jobs, but they were easy to get, and those experiences were valuable, you know. And just working in the school holidays in my dad's, you know, where he worked, I'd go along and make the coffee or something.
Actually, I was doing a bit of research on you before this
Were you now?
And I saw on the internet, you know, to dive a little, that you came from South Australia.
Yes.
In a place called Elizabeth.
Yes.
So I find that, not that it's funny, but the funniest part of my research, and I'm curious to know whether you did work there, that if you search Elizabeth on Facebook, South Australia, the number one, not to say that they have the best reviews, but the number one business that comes up in Elizabeth in South Australia is the Schnitt House.
What the heck? It's a Schnitt House.
It's a schnitzel. You know, they make schnitzels.
And so, yeah, Elizabeth is famous for the Schnitt House. I've got to say that carefully.
I thought that
other
was,
people would say it's a little bit.
I was wondering how I was going to weave that into today's
well done.
Session.
You did that well. And,
but you know, that, I think that I love a good name for a business. As you can imagine, Booktopia is, you know, a lot of people say it's a good name.
It is a good
but
name.
But the Schnitt House, I find,
that's sublime.
So Elizabeth is on the map.
I thought it would not be known for the Schnitt. It's known for a lot of things, and that's not one of them.
Yeah. So you never worked there, obviously.
I did not work at the Schnitt House, but I grew up in Elizabeth, and it's funny because it is one of those towns that does have a reaction. People, you know, it's high unemployment, high crime, you know, you name it. Elizabeth has got that bad reputation, but when I grew up there, you know, I was immune to that. I had a really lovely family. We had, you know, a great life, and I was so completely unaware of the reputation the town had until I went to school in town, in high school. I went to a girls' school. And I had my girlfriends, you know, from Elizabeth, who will catch the bus into school. And we'd proudly say, we're from Elizabeth. And they go, really? You know, that was the first moment where I realised that's not cool to be from Elizabeth. So there's a bit of a, you know, reality check. And in business, it's funny because people say, you know, networking, or where you're from, where'd you grow up, or where'd you go to uni? And I say, Adelaide, what part of Adelaide? Here we go, Elizabeth. And you can see the eyes, you know, roll back in their heads and go, you don't look like you. And I have to be, I'm at pains to say, I had a great experience growing up there, and so many great people came from Elizabeth, you know, and it has changed in the last 30 years, I grant you that. But you got to be proud of where you're from.
Absolutely.
It makes you who you are.
Absolutely.
And I'll never deny that I'm from there. I'll never dismiss it. And I have a bit of a joke with my mum because she gets a bit upset when I, you know, make jokes about Elizabeth and all that sort of stuff. But I say, Mum, you know, it's who I am. Mm. It made me who I am. And you know, you realise that not everyone comes with a silver spoon in their mouth.
Mm.
And a lot of hardship. And you go to the Elizabeth Town Centre and it is another world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you live in, you know, Adelaide or Unley or Melbourne, Toorak, Sydney, Double Bay, and you don't go to those suburbs, you are really not seeing how a vast majority of people live in this world or in this country. A lot of poverty, a lot of disadvantage, and it's a real eye-opener. And I think everyone needs to know that this is...
So just, that's a good... Because we're talking about kids before and talking about our child. I grew up in Sydney. I grew up in Lane Cove, actually. And when my mum passed away a few years ago, but my parents took me home to the house that he's still living in. And when my grandmother, who lived in the eastern suburbs, came across to Lane Cove, and they went to Chatswood to do some shopping. And Chatswood is a huge, huge metropolis. It's like one of the biggest, you know, suburban centres in Australia. And they went there. This is 1963. I've given my age away. And at the train station, there was a guy with a horse and cart. Now, we had fields of, there was sheep and other, you know, just down the road from us. Everything does change. And it's curious, I mean, so that's my childhood. And as you say, you can't take that away from you. But the kids today, with all this they've got technology. What do you do, and what did you hear anything from some of the other business owners and leaders about, given that we're all running tech companies, do they allow their kids tech? Is their life out, get outside? Because there's my wife in particular, there's a growing concern, or she's always had a concern, that there is just way too much screen time and not enough out there time. And therefore, and you mentioned before about going to see a town like Elizabeth or rural Australia or other countries, third world countries, or being part of some community projects. Is there anything that you've kind of observed or common theme with what people are doing?
About the technology?
Use of tech, and also getting kids to be visible and emotionally visible to the world where it is today.
Yeah. I think there's two schools of thought, and one is, Gary Vaynerchuk, the marketing speaker. I don't know if you know his work, but he's very much of the genie's out of the bottle. The kids are on the technology. This is their way, and this is good luck trying to get them off it, because this is who they are. It's like a fish in water. They don't know they're in the water, and the kids are in the technology. They don't know they're in the technology. So his theory is let them run. If they want to be on that, that's their way of communicating. It's their way of connecting with the world. The other school of thought, of course, is me, which is if I let my son have as much screen time as he wanted, I would never get him off. And I just don't think that's healthy. And you speak to any doctor, a girlfriend of mine's a doctor, she talks about the blue light and all the impact that has on, your mental health. And I think we have to be vigilant on that. I don't think you can just let it rip and not pay attention. So I'm at a battle. I'm constantly battling my son to get off the computer, and I have to physically, not drag him off, but go in, bring him out, And I know by the time he's 18, there'll be a phone embedded in his hand, So good luck with trying to get them off technology then. So I don't know. I don't have the solution, but I think we just have to keep monitoring it. I think you can't just let kids have left to their own devices. I mean, I say in the book, we had Pong. And we thought that was the height of sophistication, a game of table tennis on the TV.
Mm, I remember it.
It was a very different world, though. I remember being outside a lot more than what my son is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I mean, we're the same. The kids have specific hours that they're, an hour on and an hour off on the weekends, no tech during the week. Sometimes they get permission if they ask, or certain circumstances. So it's not hard and fast, but they've got to have timers. They've got to manage themselves. As they get older, that naturally has to get longer and longer because their friends are all on. But it's about also creating exciting exterior activities that they are passionate and enjoy doing, as well as, because if it's just I'm waiting for the hour to, so I can get back on tech again.
Yeah.
Which we've observed many a time.
Yeah.
That's not healthy either.
Yeah.
Even if it was 1 hour a day, it would be like clock watching. It's like being in prison where they say you've got an hour out, out of the cell walking in the sunlight. And then they're just watching and waiting. So it's really, it's an important, we've all got to be. And because we're all, not only is it new for them, it's new for us as parents.
Yeah.
We don't know what to do because no one else has told us. There's no someone's worked it out and then it's, spread like wildfire to go, we've discovered the way of managing kids' tech time and this is how you do it.
And I think I don't know if you've seen the film Ready Player One, Spielberg movie. And even if you go to a shopping centre, they've got these little VR sort of cubicles, you pay $20 and you can get $15 on the VR headset and you're in this immersive sort of chair, you're locked in and it moves with you, it's a sort of a 4D experience. And I've been on a couple of them and I absolutely love them. And the graphics are so high quality that for that 15 minutes you're in that VR world, you forget you're in the middle of a shopping centre. And when you come out of it, you go, oh, right, I'm in Westfield, and you kind of go, that was really interesting. Well, I think that was interesting because that was more interesting than my life. you know, that was actually really engaging and it was fun. And so I get why kids want to be on the computer, because that's their version of what I experienced with VR. And I think the kids who are experiencing, you know, social isolation or rejection at school, or, you know, just not being connected to friends or family, the computer is their companion and it's their escape and it's safety. And I think that is what we have to be mindful of, that they find that more engaging than real life. And I think the Ready Player One portrays it quite well in that respect. But it's here, you know, we can just go down and get your VR goggles and you're in another world. And I think that from the emotional, when you start looking at that from relationships, and you can get VR, you know, buddies and all that sort of stuff, and artificial dolls and what have you, I think we're in brave new world territory.
So do you know then, of those that have just literally, because I don't really follow them as much, but those that have made, you know, the you know, Elons and Bills and you know, Zuckerbergs of the world, do we know whether they literally spend no time on tech because they've kind of not risen above it, but it's almost like part of, you know, part of nature. When I go on holidays, it's amazing how much tech I don't use and TV that I do not watch. So do we know whether there's, you kind of get to a point where you go, are we getting to a point where we all go, that's it, you know, like, I have had enough of it. Is there any feeling for whether that's kind of, maybe you're not the best person to ask, but it's just picking up on any vibes. Are we getting to a point where Facebook is just like, oh my God, you know, it's like,
yeah.
I don't need to see another meme or another photo or that someone's, a photo of someone's lovely dinner that they're having in this restaurant. Like, are we all getting to a point where we're actually discarding it? So therefore we're going to come out of a trough and come back more into the world?
Yeah, I don't know. I remember Lindsay Fox, you know, the businessman.
Yeah.
And we had coffee one time and he was showing me his diary and it was paper. And he unfolded it like a concertina piece of paper. And it was sticky tape. And it was like the most basic diary you can imagine, but it's like Wednesday, Berlin, Friday, Paris, you know, Wednesday, Istanbul. And it was hilarious because it was like the bigger picture diary of this guy. He doesn't even use a computer. And I know Lindsay's not renowned for his computer skills. You know, that's, he's not an online tech guy. But it just made me think, the higher up you go in terms of, he's got 80,000 employees or something crazy. You know, you need to have that minutia, the detail is not there potentially. You know, you're thinking bigger picture, more relationships and all that sort of stuff. It's not so much about, have I liked that post or did I upload that blog? You know, I think he might be thinking on that level. He's more about, you know, relationships and who he meets in those meetings. So I don't know. I think there's two schools of thought. I'm not a big social media person. I don't have enough time to. I find it quite, not stressful, but I like downtime. I like to sit and do nothing. Mm-hmm. If I'm in a cab, I don't want to be on the phone. I want to look out the window. If I'm on a train, I want to look out the window. You know, I'm not connected all the time. And I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing. That's just me. I just need time to do nothing and have my brain just do nothing. Whereas some people, constantly connected. And that's not a reflection of their success or otherwise. It's just they enjoy it, you know.
I was walking down the street the other day. I may have even been in... I've done a bit of travelling, so I was in London for the book fair. I wasn't in different countries like Lindsay every day, but I was on the move. It is amazing if you walk through the city or past a bus stop or watching people on public transport, how everybody is sitting on their phone. In fact, my wife and I, and we were lucky enough to have a kids-free holiday last week in Phuket, and her best friend has a villa over there, and so we had the good fortune to go a few times. I said, watch this, and we were walking through the. Have you ever been to Phuket? Mm-hmm. The market. Mm-hmm. So the Phuket market's like, it's just you're constantly massage or t-shirt, taxi, you know, tuk-tuk, right? Constantly going, I can, and I showed it, watch this. And we walked along and no one was bothering us. Why? Because they were in their little stalls or stands and they were looking at their phones and we were being ignored. And there's this, like, it feels like one of these crazy sci-fi movies where some app gets deployed and all of a sudden everyone is just zoned out looking at this thing on the screen. And it was like I wanted to just take my kids and say to them, guys, look around. These people have been connected to a system where they are now disconnected from life. And that it's all happening out here, guys. It's like it was quite freaky. I didn't talk about it until now to anyone else, but it was just one of those moments where it's just like, I have got to get off technology as often as I can and unplug.
Yeah.
And this thing is called plugged and unplanned, but unplug and that's the healthiest and the most valuable thing you can do for your life. Which I think is what it's all about, you know. Where's the by building all these online businesses, you're creating value for your staff. They're earning money. They're buying their houses through the money. We're in a situation where we've donated hundreds of thousands of dollars of books and cash to donations and literacy projects. So, but it's one of those things where I think we're all going to get to a point and we're going to go, forget it.
I think you got to work out what's the purpose of it. You know, what are you getting by being on it? And I know that when I look at social media feeds, even magazines, you know, like Who and all that, I feel quite yuck afterwards. You know it doesn't do anything for my mental health. It doesn't make me feel good about myself. I feel envious. I feel like, oh, they're having a better time than me. They've got more friends than me. And I feel it. And I think, why would I put myself through that? So I just know when I read magazines or I go on those sort of websites, expect to feel that way. You know, it just has that impact. And even though I'm quite happy with my life, it still makes me feel lesser. And I think, I don't need that.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know what the solution is, but I think it's...
I think that's a really great place for us to end in saying that our invitation to the listeners, thankfully we didn't give you a YouTube video, and so you've been glued to a screen. You've been walking and listening to us or doing something active, which is great, but take time out. That's the invitation. Take time out. It's probably out there where you're going to come up with your next entrepreneurial online idea that you can manifest and make magic happen. Thanks, Bernadette. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.